Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Hey, this is the Bish here from the Hump Day Crew. You're tuned into one of our podcasts. Enjoy!
Everyday Australians are shying away from institutionalised religion as it offers no connection or answers to the deeper question and integral parts of existence. Although retired, Dr. Michael Newton's influence on the spiritual world is still causing a powerful ripple all across the globe.
He formed the Newton Institute, the world leaders in regression dealing with helping people answer the age-old questions that define their existence or purpose on Earth.
The Institute features four board members based in New York and North Carolina, but we are very, very lucky and very proud that one of them resides right here in Melbourne. It is with great pleasure that we welcome Peter Smith to the Hump Day Crew. Hello, Peter.
Well, hi, Ginny. Hi, Bish. It's nice to be here.
Thank you for your time today. It's a pleasure having you on the crew. Now, Peter, you're an LBL hypnotherapist, which is a life between lives hypnotherapist. Can you tell us a little bit exactly what LBL hypnotherapy is?
Well, life between lives hypnotherapy is a relatively new concept. Michael Newton did a lot of his work behind closed doors for many years because he really didn't think that a lot of people would embrace the work that he was doing. If you accept for a moment that we all have an immortal essence inside of us, we all have a soul, and all of the religions embrace that, it only makes perfect sense that that soul goes somewhere when it passes. So you would have to say that that soul lives forever. So if that soul's immortal, it seems a bit strange that it would only come down here for about 80 years or 90 years at a time. So logically, the case for reincarnation stacks up. What Newton discovered during the course of his 35-year career was that not only could you do reincarnation and go back into past life regression, but what happens in between? There's a whole lot of concepts about Bardo, the grey area, whatever you want to call that, and a lot of research done, near-death experiences, Ray Moody's work. But Michael Newton was the first one that ever mapped the spiritual realm to see what happened in between. What he discovered was when he could take people into a past life regression, if it was properly set up, then you could, in fact, take people into that in-between, have them stay there, and start to explore what happens in between lifetimes.
Mm.
And that's where his work really started to expand. And he took about 7,000 case studies over his 35-year career. So the books Journey of Souls, Destiny of Souls, Life Between Lives, Hypnotherapy, all of those books are really based on a very, very solid body of research that he undertook over 35 years.
Okay, Peter, as a director of operations for Newton Institute here, being based in Australia, can you tell us more about your particular role here in Australia?
Well, my role's to oversee the infrastructure, and we're a not-for-profit organisation based in the States, and we're virtual, if you like, because we've got therapists in 20 countries now.
Okay.
This is quite grueling work, and we train people worldwide. They go through a very robust certification process. And we drive an infrastructure behind them that allows them to be part of our website where people can access it from anywhere in the world. We've got a code of ethics. We have policies, procedures, that sort of thing, like the normal governance type approaches that not-for-profits need. So, that comes with a certain amount of administrative responsibility. It's been my role to set that up for the Newton Institute. To oversee the board functions and to make sure that we run, you know, with due processes, that we've got to do some of this very human stuff while we're still doing a lot of our spiritual stuff.
Mm. Peter, you're telling me off air that you've been studying with Dr. Michael Newton for about 10 years now?
Five.
2005, yeah. Not 2000.
2005.
Because they're never good at maths. Well, I don't think I will be in my next life.
You're not too good at that, are you?
Not in my next life either, not in any lifetime. But what made you study hypnotherapy, Peter?
Well, I got to tell you, Ginny, that hypnotherapy changed my life once. I suppose this sounds like an ad or something, doesn't it? But really, I had a corporate background before I got into this work properly, and I was a stressed young executive with a couple of small children, and I lived up in Sydney at that time in the Blue Mountains. We're a little alternative up there in some of the spots, and my local GP was an Indian doctor who did Indian cooking classes.
Really?
General practitioner, and she did what she called relaxotherapy.
Oh, wow.
It was hypnosis. So she taught me self-hypnosis, my GP up there. And Dr. Ballou, if you're still out there somewhere, I want to say thanks. But she taught me how to take myself into a really deep, relaxed state and just to release all the stresses and anxieties that I was picking up out of a corporate job. So that really whet my appetite for the deeper states of consciousness and what we can discover there, because I'd already made this tiny discovery and it changed my life. So I guess at that point I started to read the books, the normal rounds of reincarnation books. There was some amazing research done by a guy called Peter Ramster back in the 80s. And Peter, I've had the great pleasure to meet. He did a whole TV program around taking people overseas and proving past lives. It was out there in the 80s, but I don't think we were quite ready for it. But that too is a great body of work.
So I was just going to say, you can actually self-hypnotise then. You can actually hypnotise yourself into a relaxed state or meditate. Is that similar?
Bish, it's not different in brainwave patterns from what meditation is. So if you take your brainwave patterns down into, we're in the beta range now, and if you drop down through the alpha range and into the theta range, you're in quite a deep meditative state.
So there are three ranges, beta, alpha, and...
And theta. And below that is delta, which is pretty much the sleep state. So if you make it down to there, you've pretty much nodded off. But with the LBL work, with the Life Between Lives work that we do that in the theta range of brainwave patterns. Most hypnotherapy is done in alpha, but for some of the deeper states and to open up memories beyond this incarnation, you need to get as far away as you can from the human condition up there in the beta brainwave patterns and the conscious mind. The deeper you go, the greater the discoveries of what we can find inside.
And what made you, you said you were reading a lot of books on hypnosis and Dr. Ballou taught you how to self-hypnotise.
She did.
What connected you to Michael Newton's work? How did you come across him?
Well, I started to, I actually decided to become a hypnotherapist on the basis of having read a lot of past life stuff. And I thought there was so much more to us than meets the eye. How powerful would it be to discover this for yourself? So I did. I went off and I found a hypnotherapist who did some past life work and I did my own explorations and I thought this is fantastic. I'm really drawn to this. And I studied hypnotherapy as a result with the intention of becoming a past life therapist. So about that time I went into a bookstore, good old Borders. I was looking for a book for the hypnotherapist teacher that I'd had, the lecturer at our college. And, you know, I closed my eyes, stood in front of a bookshelf and said, take me to the book I need today. What I did, I forgot to say, take it to the book my teacher needs.
Yeah.
So I got there and I pulled Journey of Souls off the shelf and I read the back cover and something inside me just went whoosh. And I knew that I'd found what I was supposed to do.
Actually, when I got my copy of Journey of Souls, I was actually a bit hesitant to read it. But one of my spiritual coaches said to me, when you do read it, you get it. Like, you know, it makes sense.
You know, Jenny, I have so many people who talk to me about this work and they say, I read that book and it's like I was just remembering stuff I already know.
Yeah.
And I said, well, yeah. There's a part of you that does.
Wow. Well, I've got to get amongst this.
I'll lend it to you, Bishwa.
Very kind of you. How long does a general LBL therapy session go for, Peter?
These are deep sessions, Bish, and to get people down into those deeper states takes skill and it takes time and it takes a state of readiness for the client as well. And often we'll have worked with that client up until that point and we might have done some deep hypnosis, we might have done some past life regression. That, of course, is the way into Life Between Lives. We go to the end of a previous lifetime and we cross over into the in-between. So the best preparation is to actually do past life regression first. The session itself will normally go for around 4 hours by the time that we work through the preparation activities that the client's undertaken. We spend a lot of time getting them down into a really deep state of trance, into those theta brainwave patterns. Needs to be quite soft and quite gentle, and to coax an immortal soul out of the human being, it can't be done in a hurry, and it can't be done with any of those quite authoritarian and direct approaches to hypnosis that you see sometimes. It's really about winning the trust of that soul so it emerges and tells its story.
Now, the cluster that which I've read in Journey of Souls is the group of souls that you come across in every lifetime.
Yeah.
Now, before going into these therapy sessions, you ask the client or the person going under to form a list of characters, which are people who have played a significant part in your life. So if it was you, Bishwa, you'd probably write Emma down. Again, you'd use 5 words to describe her.
Yeah.
Emma's his fiancée.
Okay.
So can you tell us a bit why you ask the client to bring these list of characters in?
Sure. It does a couple of things for us. We actually get them to bring the cast of characters and also the questions they may have for themselves in the soul state. A lot of people come to a crossroads in their life and they want to explore career, relationships, why has the world treated me so badly? What's my purpose? There may be something inside of them that's starting to wake up. There may be some sort of a spiritual crisis they're having. These are all the symptoms of somebody who's ready to do some of this deeper work. So we get them to come along with that list of questions and also with a cast of characters. And part of the preparation for us taking them into those deeper states is, in fact, going through that cast of characters and going through the questions so that we know what they want. The reason that we do that is, of course, when they're in those deeper states, they don't want to worry about any of this stuff. They don't want to say, can you find my grandmother who passed last year and see if her soul's out there somewhere? We actually have that intention, so it's our role as the facilitator to, once they move into that soul persona, which will often have different characteristics of personality, a different tone and voice, a different name, as you might have seen in the books as well, we want them as far away from the human condition as they can be, and we facilitate their questions on their behalf. So to actually know their background, their intention for the sessions, that's the part that's most valuable to us. Mm. And because we're using our conscious mind, we want them out of theirs. So we don't want them to have to think about stuff. We just want them to feel and experience where their soul takes them.
Is this dangerous, Peter?
Dangerous.
Is it dangerous for the people taking part? I mean, are there potential side effects if you're getting people into a state of relaxation and going through, as you said, different stages? Are there any dangers to this?
I guess the safety comes from both the human and the immortal angles, Bish, if you like. From the human perspective, when we train people through the Newton Institute, we get people who are already qualified and experienced hypnotherapists. We then ensure that they've had past life regression training, so they have an understanding of how to work beyond this this human incarnation, and they're not freaked out with somebody who's suddenly on a battlefield in the 1700s being shot or maimed or something like that. That's a day at the office. They work with it to desensitize it, to heal it, to let it go, whatever they need to. So they've already got that type of experience. Then we, with the Newton Institute, we take people in who then need to embrace a code of ethics for how we work. So by the time we've actually got them into the training, we can be pretty well assured that they're good practitioners that have the purity of this work at heart. Then we take them through a one-week residential program that is very grueling, in which they undertake their own LBLs and deliver it to a colleague. They do worm work. So there's a number of experientials that they do while we train them in the Newton methodology. Then at the end of that week, we say to them, we think you've done a great job so far. Now we need you to submit some case studies to our team in America and other countries, and we assess your work. And they send recordings and written sessions. Once that happens, we then certify them, and they're lodged on our website of the Newton Institute. So the first piece of what we can do is to ensure that we've got the best possible practitioners out there.
Okay.
That's the first. This is a long
answer. Yeah, it's a long answer,
And, Bish, that's only half.
That's so great. This is
so the second half to my question. It's not like I get asked this question at all, is it?
No, of course not.
And clients often ask this same question, so it's a good one that you've asked. Mm. The second part is that you've got an immortal essence inside of you, and it's sitting right there now.
Okay.
And that soul loves you so much that it picked your body and your situation and your human personality for that blending of the immortal and human being out of 6.7 billion people on the planet. So the question you've got to ask is, how much does your soul love you? And if that's the case, then how much does your soul want to look after you? And of all the sessions that I've seen happen in my own practice and throughout our institute, we've never seen a soul completely traumatize a human being. We've only ever seen them love them, nurture them, and look after them. And that happens on two levels as well, because first and foremost, your soul wants to look after you because it wants to help you to grow and nurture and to explore. You're the vehicle by which it undertakes this incarnation. But secondly, there's a bit of vested interest in there too, that it doesn't want to damage the bus it's travelling around in.
Mm.
Okay, so these sessions are, you know, if you ask how dangerous can really deep relaxation be, the response really is, you know, not very, but then these other things in place help as well.
Okay. And during the first section of your answer, you mentioned 1706 Battlefield and dealing with different stories that come out when you're going through this hypnotherapy. are they quite typical? I mean, is there a lot of stories that come through from the souls about past life?
Yeah, well, that's the way in which we get people into the LBL state is via that past life. So we always take them back on a path in, under the Newton methodology. We move back through childhood, move back through the womb. We go back further into another lifetime. It may be their most recent one. It may be one that has particular significance for them. So past all LBLs do incorporate a component of past life work, and that it's in itself can be fascinating before you even get into the LBL state.
Hmm. When you have gotten your client into the LBL state, has there been some stories that you've been absolutely blown away by? That wasn't a pun on the battlefield or anything. But
well,
you know,
oh, okay. Yeah. You mean figuratively?
Yeah, figuratively.
there's been many. It's, you know, a couple I could throw out there. You know, I remember a guy who went back to an American Indian life, and he was a young medicine man in the old American West, and he was travelling across the battlefield, and it was his job to release the souls. And this guy was like this big burly construction worker.
Yeah.
That came in for his session. His wife had the idea, and he wasn't quite sure about it, but he went down into this most beautiful state, and he spoke with these very eloquent and articulate, soft-spoken tones of a young Indian medicine man, and his job was to go across the battlefield and to release the souls after the battles. When he went to one particular part, there was a cavalry officer there who thought he was coming to scalp him, so of course he raised his dying breaths, he raised his own gun and shot him in the chest. So, of course, we're going through all of this and reliving it. And I said to the client, I said, well, what happens now? And he says, now it gets even easier because I can take them off the battlefield and raise them up with me as we all go home together. And I said, well, what happens with your immortal essence now? And what happens to this lifetime? He says, well, my energy becomes part of the rocks and the trees and the animals and the fields, and it's all the one energy, and now I'm one again. And, you know, I mean, it's those types of sessions that, you know, you find a tear in the corner of your own eye as they're going through this remarkable experience.
I suppose this is the romantic in me coming out, but has there been a love story that you've come across that's made you go, wow?
Well, there's been a few of those, and they're not always exactly what you'd expect, but I once worked with a young fellow who was on the verge of losing his marriage because he didn't want to have children, and he couldn't understand why, and he went to see a psychic, and the psychic said, well, you need to go and find out if there's something beyond this lifetime, which he didn't really believe in until he came.
Mm.
And we went back to a lifetime where, in a fit of rage, he murdered his wife and child.
Oh.
And he, by releasing that into the past, where it really belongs, into that other lifetime, that had a happy ending in that he was able to get rid of that block and was able to stay with his partner and start the family that they'd always wanted to. He just couldn't understand this this feeling he had inside that made him want to run the other way. So they were on the verge of divorce, but by doing that and by having the courage to have a look a bit deeper inside, he found what was really troubling him, released it, and it actually had a happy ending.
Mm.
Okay. It's pretty deep stuff. I mean, I'm a bit of a novice at this. I don't know much about this at all.
Actually. Only this lifetime.
Yeah. I'm sure if we delve deep enough, there could be some past history or past stories that I may stumble upon. What's one thing media and one society and also a spiritual world have taken their own adaptation and definition of the word soulmate?
Mm.
And soulmate is often a word that I use with my fiance, actually, and trying to find that special person in the physical state, and I suppose this time rather than the spiritual. What would be your definition of a soulmate?
There's romantic connotations around the word soulmate, and there's a group of people that we, and this is back to Ginny's question about clusters before, there's a group of souls that are part of a little soul family, if you like, and we tend to come back and reincarnate with each other and change roles around and do that sort of stuff. But we find normally in these cluster groups of, you know, I've had them as small as 4 or 5 and as large as 15 or 16, and they do stay there for a while before moving on to other cluster groups for mutual learning and that sort of thing. Normally there's 1 or 2 or maybe even 3 where you might come back and you might form those romantic relationships in different lifetimes. So You know, I hear all this the stories about twin flames and all that. They're one soul that's been split into two bodies and all that sort of stuff. I haven't had any case studies that absolutely replicate that. I've certainly had cases where somebody split their soul energy into two different bodies at the same time to expand their learning in, at different times, and to have that happen simultaneously to gather, you know, more data quicker, I guess you could call that. Mm-hmm. But for soulmates, I think there is often, you know, there's those one or two that are the ones that we tend to have as a favourite that we like to reincarnate with. Obviously, when you've had that energy shared across many lifetimes, there's a special type of energetic connection that comes with people who've done that before.
And is a soulmate generally a partner or romantic figure, or can it be someone who's like your best friend?
No, I've had nephews, siblings, all sorts of stuff. And, you know, it can be any sort of a relationship. It doesn't necessarily have to be a physical romantic one. It can be just a real closeness. You know, you see a mother and daughter that sometimes seem more like sisters and that sort of thing. Sometimes they're picking up the traces of some of the setups in other lifetimes that they've put together.
Also, with how you were speaking about the soul splitting, mm-hmm. is that when the soul does split, would it be... I know this is a very... I'm thinking really outside the square here, but would those souls ever meet in the lifetime?
Well, I'll give you a real case example, which might be the best way to share that.
Yeah.
As you may or may not know from the Newton methodology, we bring a percentage of our energy back to Earth. And depending on the challenges we set in that lifetime, we leave part of our energy back there to continue the learning in the spiritual realm while we come here to, if you like, try out the theory in this harsh physical realm that we're in. I had a client who I asked that question to, and I said, what percentage of your energy have you brought back in this lifetime? She said, around 40%, which is not really high. It's you know, probably on the low to average percentage of energy. And I said, so how much have you left back in the spiritual realm? Because sometimes we just ask things just to double check. And she said, 20%. So I asked the obvious question, where's the other 40%? And she said, in China. I said, okay. I said, what's the other 40%? Tell me about the circumstances of that other 40% in China. And it was a guy working in an office in a male body, and he was just middle manager doing his stuff. She was able to report back on how he was doing and where he was at and what he was doing. And I said, are you ever destined to meet? She said, well, what would be the point of that? Because we've split our energy into two different bodies on the basis that we can then... pretty much learn different lessons and come back together when the time is right to share what we've learned.
Mm. And just me again, layman's terms, so just to get my head around this, how does she know that there's a guy in China who's a natural, he's a worker, and he's got half of her soul as well?
Good question. Yeah. When we went back to the time when she was planning this lifetime. Okay, so there can be a body selection, if you like. And it's like the way it's portrayed often by the soul, and they like to portray stuff that we can actually integrate in human terms. And you could argue that, you know, this is an energetic realm where there's not necessarily temples and gardens and all that sort of stuff. But the soul does love to tell a story in a way that those things can be created in that energy so that we can integrate that information into our lives and understand the difference between this place and that place. So what she did was she went back to that life selection room, as they call it, and she'd actually went back to the time when she'd made a decision to split her energy. And on doing that, she was able to precog or get some flashes of what that would look like as it panned out in those lifetimes. So she was really reporting back from that experience.
You just spoke about body selection, Peter, about how your soul chooses the body it chooses to house itself in when it comes to Earth. Now, I've read in Newton's book that... when the soul does choose a body, there have been cases where the soul rejects the body or the soul can't handle being that particular body that they've chosen. So I'm sort of talking about suicide here. Why does that tend to happen?
Suicide's a really complicated process, if you like, for a soul. And I'll tell a suicide story as well. But there's a couple of things that I've come across. I've had some clients who've been suicidal. And sometimes we've tracked that back to a pattern that's gone across a lot of lifetimes. They have a tendency to get to a certain age and they may take their own life. So every lifetime they come back with an attempt to break that pattern. To actually take somebody into a life between lives session and say, well, this has been a pattern of yours over four or five different lifetimes. You're at that same stage in your life now. Now that you know that, how do you feel about trying to break that pattern? And they can actually release that pattern into the past where it belongs. We can do a whole different range of healing interventions that we use that are we can access in the soul state, guides, councils, energetic healing chambers. All of these resources are available to us to heal and to break some of these patterns. So some of that might come back, they might come back with the intention to actually break that pattern. And to be honest, sometimes there are accidents and things just go astray, and you know, this is a physical place of random experiences, and sometimes those things happen and somebody may overdose when they didn't intend to or something like that. Sometimes there are dedicated cases of people leaving early also. And one such instance I had was with somebody that I worked with, and she was a single mum. She had a son who was 9 years old. And her partner, the week she fell pregnant, her partner threw himself off a building. And so she'd carried the guilt of that because she thought that because she'd fallen pregnant, that that had been what sent him over the edge. When we went into her Life Between Lives session, we found that in the setup stage that she was talking to him about how this life would pan out. And it was actually a balancing life for another lifetime 200 years previously in South Africa, down around the Cape at the bottom there. Cape of Good Hope.
Cape of Good Hope, yep.
So they were down there, and thanks, Bish.
That's all right. I've been there.
I'm LBL, not geography. So they were a couple, and the roles were reversed. She was the man, he was the woman. There'd been a shipwreck on a reef down there. She, as the male, had wanted to go out and try and rescue people. She said, don't go, it's too dangerous. He'd swum out to try and rescue the people out on the ship and had drowned. So he'd had an early exit. And the man in this lifetime, as the woman then, had to endure a lot of pain from that grief and that loss. And it was like it was almost a suicide attempt to go out there and try and rescue those people. So this was a balancing life where they changed places, and he did suicide and she had to feel it because they'd been the man and woman the previous. The wonderful part about that was that while they were doing this planning, this other little soul came up and said, well, I'll come back as the baby and I'll come back and I'll support you through that. And as she's reliving this, of course, all the tears are rolling down her cheeks and she's seeing the most amazing things. And she's releasing this guilt that she's kept for 9 years. And, of course, by the time we got through that, out of the end of it, she'd released that guilt that she'd held. She understood that this was a karmic pattern that she'd signed up for, that released all of the guilt that she had. It allowed her to finally let go of a lot of the things she'd been carrying. And she came back and she told me a beautiful story when she came out of trance about how ever since her son had been a little boy, even 2 years old, and she'd been upset about something, he'd come up and he put an arm around her and said, it'll be all right, Mummy. So it's like he was pulling on his plan every time that she was upset, and he was providing that comfort and support.
Wow. Fish was a bit stoked there.
No, yeah. I'm taking it all in. It's intriguing.
Wow.
And so, as we've discussed, I'm the man who is learning, and I'd like to find out more about this. So what's the best thing for me and the listener out there to actually find out more about the Newton Institute and how we can get involved?
Sure. Well, we have a website, newtoninstitute.org. Our home country is the USA. We're in 20-odd countries. In 2008, we ran the first ever Southern Hemisphere training in Sydney. So we now have a network of people emerging across Australia and New Zealand, and on that website, on the Find a Therapist, you can find an LBL therapist who's your local person in Western Australia, Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne, and we have them spread through some country areas as well. So all those people are trained and accredited by the Newton Institute. Obviously, Michael's books are out there as well, and there's details of those on the website, and the fourth book's now just been launched as well, which is Memories of the Afterlife. And that's 32 case studies from our therapists around the world. And that really signals that Michael's work's expanding lot more than just the one man who did the 7,000 case studies. He's now trained a lot of people along the processes that he perfected over his career. And that fourth book, all the proceeds of that go to the Institute, our not-for-profit organisation in America, to expand this work worldwide.
Now, Peter, on a spirituality revolution front, this is my first year uni stuff coming out here. It's apparent here that people are relating more to spirituality nowadays as opposed to, you know, your institutionalised religions. How do you see spirituality and people's connections to it in the world in the future?
I get asked at my clinic a lot of the time, what's the difference between religion and spirituality? Because for many lives, people have actually interchanged the two. But for me, and I believe that all the religions, all the organised religions have love, peace and harmony at their core, forgiveness, compassion, all of those wonderful things. Sometimes as we implement the interpretation of those things, we sometimes lose something a little bit in the translation, and with, you know, different types of things that happen for extremists. But I do believe that religion is a set of core beliefs or values that can be handed to us that we can choose to embrace and live our lives by. But for me, spirituality is a journey within. It's about something that you find inside yourself. It's a connection with perhaps a deeper part of yourself that then resonates at a different level to what looking for something externally does. I believe people will do more and more of this. I believe that we're less likely to follow a pattern and follow an ideology that we don't necessarily embrace. And whereas many of the religions can be a path towards spirituality, particularly Buddhism, if you like, which is heavily focused towards the internal journey, I think we're going to do more of that. For people to actually know that there's more to them than meets the eye and that there's an immortal essence running around in each of us, I mean, that's very liberating.
Mm.
And it actually, you know, they talk about don't sweat the small stuff. I mean, there's nothing like knowing that you've got an immortal being inside of you to feel better about sitting in a traffic jam.
Mm.
Saying, well, you know, my soul doesn't really care about this because it's immortal. So what's this 20 minutes I've lost in traffic compared to the immortal journey of this spirit?
Yeah.
So I think we're going to do more of that. I think people are going to seek their own answers, Jenny, more than they have before. And the best place to find those answers is really inside, not on the externals.
Fantastic. Well, Peter, thank you so much for your time today. It's been
a pleasure
having you on the Hump Day Crew. I'm sure Bish has learnt a few things.
Oh, I have. Yeah, very much so. Yeah, very much. I've been involved in the past with psychics, and I've attended a few psychic readings with old girlfriends that I've had, and I also bought my property off of two authors that are very much into healing and spirituality and crystals and Reiki. So during that process of buying my house, I learned quite a bit about that. And it took 6 months. This is a quick story, but it took 6 months from when I offered to buy the property back in the UK to the final stage. And basically, they had two different people go and offer them £10,000 more each time to buy that house because it took so long. The property market was going up. But they felt that it wouldn't be in their wisdom and in their sort of spirituality sort of plane to actually do that. Because if everyone did that, then the world would be a negative place. So that helped me. That's my little story, because I've got this great property, a great price, and also it was just a really good feeling from them. And they also sent me a couple of books as well that they had actually written.
Fantastic. So maybe your soul planned that one, Bish.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And when we arrived, they left all the crystals up around the different windows.
Wow.
Which was quite interesting. It felt like a good place.
Was this in London?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've still got the place in the UK.
Yeah,
not here. Can't buy property here.
No, you can't.
But thank you very much, Peter. It's really interesting.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You can check out more information on the Newton Institute at thenewtoninstitute.org. And remind you, it is a not-for-profit organisation, so check that out. That's thenewtoninstitute.org. Hey, it's Ginny from the Hump Day Crew. Thank you so much for tuning in to one of our podcasts and for supporting Joy 94.9 and the Hump Day Crew. We will catch you next Wednesday from 6:30 a.m.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.